Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. This is Route 51, Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Today, we're taking a return trip on the Never Forgotten Honor Flight as our travels take us once again from North Central Wisconsin to Washington, D.C., on a trip for surviving World War II veterans to see the memorial that has been built in their honor. A few weeks ago, we previewed the excursion. Now we get to see how it all went and how the experience affected the vets who finally got some of the recognition that they deserved. When they returned last week, more than 500 people greeted the group at Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee. It was 10:30 at night. Every spot in the parking lot, just about anyway, was full. The halls were packed with flag-waving friends, family, and well-wishers. There was a brass band and a military honor guard. Our guests today include, once again, Jim Campbell. He's one of the founders of Never Forgotten Honor Flight. Also with us today, Pete Wasson, assistant managing editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, who made the flight to Washington and filed a series of reports on the veterans and their experiences. One of those reports was on a gentleman who is also with us today, Joe Carlin. Now, he's a member of the 8th Infantry Division, who was part of the D-Day invasion on the banks of Normandy. Carlin was wounded during the fighting in the following days, and he has just celebrated his 91st birthday. So happy birthday, Joe. We want to hear from you. Are you a veteran of the Great War, or a veteran of Korea, Vietnam, or Iraq? Is there a World War II veteran in your life that was important to you? Maybe a father, maybe a mother, maybe an uncle, a friend. Share your stories and your support. Give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Jim, in your estimation, did it live up to your expectations?
It was beyond all of our expectations, and I would be remiss at this point if I didn't thank, on behalf of myself and Mike Thompson, the co-chairman, all the volunteers, our board of directors, all those individuals and companies and the media that supported our efforts to get the first flight off the ground, because there was a few points in that journey that we weren't quite sure it was going to get off. And it ended up being, I think, a phenomenal day that literally changed the lives of 163 men and women.
103 of those were the World War II vets.
That's correct.
Talk about the other people who were on the flight.
Well, we had about 53 individuals we called guardians, and their purpose was to make sure that the veterans had a safe and enjoyable trip. And quite frankly, some of the veterans required a little assistance with wheelchairs. Some of them, however, were quite mobile. And a number of guardians ended up, were chasing their veterans all over the place, trying to keep up with them. I tell you, some of these gentlemen, as Joe is, 91 years old, some of the guardians had a challenge keeping up with them. And the other group of individuals that supported us were the media, the print, the radio, the television, and photography to support the effort for things that are going to be coming in the future.
I couldn't believe that crowd at Central Wisconsin Airport. I drove up there, and I couldn't believe that every parking space, it seemed, was filled. And then the people lining the hallway, packed in, waving flags, a brass band, at 10:30 at night on a weekday.
Yep, and that brass band, by the way, was put together ad hoc. Those individuals had never played together before. It did include a World War II veteran, as well as a number of high school students. And quite frankly, I was having such an emotional time when I got on the concourse. I never even saw them. I guess they were sitting in the back of ways. But,
Pete Wasson, your general impressions as a reporter who went along for the ride?
Well, the return to the airport was stunning. And what was most surprising about it is not all of those people had a connection to any of the vets. I mean, some of them were just people who came out to show their support. But my job was to tell the stories that you didn't get to see. And, I don't think any of us could have anticipated what happened at Arlington And I don't think any of us could have anticipated what happened on the plane coming home when those 103 veterans all opened mail that was sent to them by friends, relatives, school kids, and their peers in nursing homes and places like that, who wrote very personal messages to them that moved just about everybody in the plane to tears. But again, that was secondary to what happened at Arlington, which was breathtaking.
And describe that for us.
Well, we had just returned from the changing of the guard, and we were walking down. And in Arlington, they have these very narrow pathways, and we were walking kind of single file or shoulder to shoulder down these pathways. And from up ahead of us, we heard clapping start. And I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it at first, but it grew to this crescendo. And I walked up and found that a group of school kids from Sturgeon Bay, happenstance, you know, complete happenstance that they were there on the same day, had discovered who these 103 men and two women, 101 men and two women, right, in blue jackets saying Honor Flight, they had discovered who they were. And they were giving them a standing ovation, hugging them, shaking their hands, crying with them. And it was one of the most moving experiences I've ever had as a journalist.
The children from Sturgeon Bay were from eighth grade class, and they actually followed suit with a ninth grade history class from Boise, Idaho. And the lead teacher was told that the veterans were coming from the changing of the guard. And he said, well, we've got another appointment, but you know what? This is more important. And when those two groups of children lined the sidewalk, it brought everyone else from the area. And people that have worked there for years and driven the buses and guarded, they have never, ever seen that. And the irony here is the other appointment that these children had was they were going to lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which requires pre-written approval and so forth.
Right.
And specific timing. So that's what they canceled. And as a result of meeting Joe and his 102 comrades, they decided that they would go into the Arlington Cemetery itself in the World War II section and pick a veteran and place the wreath at his tomb.
And then we're leaving. I mean, it's half an hour later. We've all boarded on the buses, and we're driving out through the narrow winding driveway into Arlington, and they're all lying in the street, clapping and crying, still crying, watching the veterans leave Arlington. None of us could have anticipated this happening.
That's nothing that you planned for.
We would nothing all love to have taken credit for that. Absolutely spontaneous.
And, you know, like Jim said, once the kids started clapping, all the other tourists started coming, and they were taking photos and video and shaking hands with the veterans as well. Ask Mr. Carlin what it was like.
Joe Carlin, what was that like?
Well.
And happy 91st birthday.
Thank you. I pretty much have to agree with the two gentlemen had just said. It was a day that, in my wildest dreams, I never believed this would happen. Very much different than when I came home from service back in 45, the middle of December. I got to Wausau on the old, they called it a passenger train, but I call it a boxcar with some seats in that were like park benches. I got to Wausau about 7:15 in the morning, and I got off of that train, and the only thing I heard was some dog barking about 2.5 blocks east of the depot, and it kind of reminded me of myself out there in a foxhole. Cold, wet, wanted something to eat, and nobody got up. But the only thing I didn't dare howl because my partner would have batted me over the head with his shovel. But going back to the trip to Washington, like I say, it was the greatest day of my life, and everything fell in place so perfectly. There was just with all these old guys, I'm one of them, to try and get everybody coordinated. And with no mix-up, it was beyond comprehension. I never believed it. And, of course, my companion, Patty, I got to give her a lot of credit. I kidded her about putting up with this old guy for a whole day, but she wrote me a letter in the end and appreciated the fact that she was with me. So a lot of the fellows sort of give me the rib and ask what I'm doing walking around with this pretty lady all day long, where they had a gentleman of maybe 70 years old. So I says, well, that's life isn't always fair. It's a draw of the cards, and I think I picked the best one.
Joe Carlin, 91 years old. He was at the invasion of Normandy. He was at D-Day. He was wounded in the European theater. We're going to be talking about his experiences and the experiences of the never-forgotten honor flight with Jim Campbell and Pete Wasson. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Wherever you're listening, please give us a phone call at 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area, or anywhere you're listening, 1-800-780-9742, to share experiences with a World War II vet that might have touched your life, or a veteran of any war, whether it's Korea or Vietnam or the first invasion of the Gulf War or the ongoing conflicts in Iraq. This is your show. It works better when you call in. I'm Glenn Moberg. My guest today, Jim Campbell of the Never Forgotten Honor Flight. We also have Pete Wasson, the assistant managing editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, and 91-year-old veteran Joe Carlin talking about the Never Forgotten Honor Flight. And gentlemen, what I'm going to do right now is play a story that we put together when you folks returned. And Jim, I want to thank you so much for gathering the sound and gathering the interviews on the trip there and back. And here are some of the vets in their own words. 103 vets from North Central Wisconsin, all in their late 80s and 90s, are on a jet to Washington to see the World War II Memorial. For all of them, the war is something they've never forgotten. Navy pilot Bill Jones was shot down over the South Pacific.
All four engines quit. We had to bail out and spent the day in a little one-man life raft. It was a rough day, and the raft kept turning over. A wave would hit and turn you over, and you'd crawl back in it. Spent the day doing that.
And then Jones saw the Navy destroyer.
And they threw a rope out to me, and they say, grab the rope. I was about 30 or 40 feet from the destroyer. And one bright young sailor on board said, let go, let go. So he dove in with his clothes on, and when I got on board, they said in another minute you'd have been chewed up in the propeller.
Another Wisconsin veteran, Lester Buck Rogers, still remembers the constant danger.
I was in the Navy, the Coconut Navy, we called it. Every time I got aboard a ship to go someplace, it either got shot at or something.
For Rogers, the celebratory feeling of the trip is tempered by the still painful feeling of the loss.
I'm kind of sad. Yeah, all of my comrades that we made it. It upsets me.
Bill Schell and Ed Mandrowski are also haunted by memories of the South Pacific.
Crossfire killed, I don't know how many Marines were killed or slaughtered. I've never seen anything like it. We see guys floating around in the bay dead.
We were on top of the hill, and we were surrounded for 10 days. And that always comes back to me in my sleep. Since I came out, I had a couple of nervous breakdowns because of this particular thing.
Like so many other World War II vets, Schell and Mandrowski seem surprised that their service is finally being recognized.
For guys like me that didn't get any recognition and never did, probably never did, never wanted it. I'm an American. I love America. I'll do it. I'll do it again if I was asked to.
This is awesome. I haven't had anything like this since I had my 90th birthday party.
When they arrived in D.C., the Wisconsin vets were greeted like heroes by school children everywhere they went, leaving a lasting impression on John Hochberger, Clifford Pitsley, and James Reynolds.
The thing that comes to me strong and hard is how these kids, the young folks, how they came through line after line everywhere we went.
I couldn't believe all the kids that were lined up out there when we were in Arlington Cemetery congratulating us, thanking us.
For all those school kids that came and shook our hands and said, thank you for your service, and God bless America.
And for Irvin Feit, Walden Danielson, and Orv Evanson, the trip to Washington was one of the best days of their long lives.
A great day. Go down in history as the best I've ever had.
And it's been the most wonderful thing I've had probably my whole life.
Don't walk in front of me, because I might not follow. Don't walk behind me, because I might not lead. But walk beside me and be my friend. Let freedom ring.
Jim Campbell of the Never Forgotten Honor Flight helped gather the interviews for this story. His organization is already planning a return trip to Washington for another 100 vets this fall. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371 if you're in the Wausau area, 1-800-780-9742, anywhere in north central Wisconsin. Jim Campbell, that second flight, it's already full.
It's full. We're working on the flight for next spring already. The flight has been scheduled for October 4th of this year. And the applications are coming in every day, and it's wonderful.
You know, my experience has always been that it's difficult to get a lot of veterans, particularly World War II vets, to talk about their experiences. I know my dad was in the European theater. And he never talked about the war to me. I still don't know what happened to him while he was there. But Jim, they opened up to you. They talked to you on that flight out.
And maybe it was the day they spent with all their comrades and visiting the memorials. And I can only surmise it was a very emotional for them as well, and a release to talk to their comrades from 65 years ago. And it was a very moving experience to listen to those stories.
Pete Wasson, the stories you put together for the Daily Herald, same thing, some amazing stories and some things that a lot of people have been bottling up for a number of years.
Several of the guys that I spoke to said that they had lost their wives within the last 2 or 3 years. And I think that that probably brought them in touch with their own mortality. And said, and several of their kids said it was time for him to let this out. You know, it was time for him to talk about this. And several of them talked to Jim, I think, as a fellow comrade in arms, because Jim also was in the military. I wasn't, but my grandfather served in World War II. He was on Omar Bradley's staff through North Africa and Italy. And my father was a Marine in Korea. Both of them died when I was young. My father died when I was 14, mm-hmm. and my grandfather died when I was in high school. And so in a way, this was an opportunity for me to commune with them, because I never got to hear their stories of service in the war. And so when I sat down and talked with guys like Mr. Carlin, I was in a way talking to my grandfather. And the stories that they told, you know, some of these guys were in combat, some weren't. Some of them saw the horrors of war. Others supported the war effort in other ways. They all had great stories to tell. They all told stories of saving the world. This was a war that was not morally ambiguous the way some of the wars since then have been. They were fighting true evil.
Joe Carlin, did you get the feeling that you and your comrades in arms were saving the world when you were overseas? You must have. On that stormy day when you landed at Normandy?
Well, when you're in service, the orders come down. If they say you go, you go. You know that it's possibly the last step you're going to take, but you don't refuse. That's the way it works. And going back to speaking of the war, my wife hated war stories, and so I sort of clammed up. I didn't pay any attention to it, forgot about it, but I lost my wife be 3 years now in June. And, of course, I had a chance to be accepted on this flight, and Pete come over. We had a few conversations and sort of told him what happened. And
Now, Joe, you spent 41 years as, was it the chief electrician at Wausau Hospital after you came back?
That's right.
How did your experience overseas, the challenges you faced, getting wounded, seeing the carnage that you saw, people you knew being shot, how did that affect you? How were you able to adapt to life when you came back?
Well, you have a choice. You either forget about it and get your, like they say, get your head on straight. I didn't have good education before I went into service. So I kind of got, I kind of think I got the dirty end of it when you get frontline infantry. There is no, you can't go any lower. And I swore every step I took, if I ever got out of service alive, I have to get my feet on the ground and get me a trade. So I took advantage of the GI Bill of Rights and took up electrical engineering, which took me just about 5 years to do.
Joe, I want you to hold that thought. We've got a break for the news. We're talking about the Never Forgotten Honor Flight, World War II vets and their services. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742.
Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities, dedicated to improving the independence, productivity, and integration of people with developmental disabilities. Wisconsin BPDD, real lives, real...
As we listen to the strains of the Glenn Miller Orchestra, who was recording things like String of Pearls in the 40s, when a lot of the gentlemen and the two ladies who flew to Washington, D.C. on the Never Forgotten Honor Flight were serving their country in World War II. We welcome back Jim Campbell of that organization, Pete Wasson of the Wausau Daily Herald, and Joe Carlin, who was an infantryman and who landed at D-Day in Normandy. Also joining us by phone right now, Irv Feit, who also made the trip and who, Irv, tell us about your experience, your service during the war.
Yeah, this is Irv Feit. My service was with the 28th Division. It was an infantry division. I was in the 110th Regiment, and we went through the landing. Supposed to be dry landing, but when the door opens, you jump in, whether it's over your head or not, and up the beach and through Paris. We liberated Paris, went on through France, Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Bastogne, and into Germany through the Siegfried Line there.
Hey, Irv, Joe Carlin here is smiling at this idea of you jumping off the transport and suddenly you're in over your head. Joe, did you have a common experience here?
I would just like to ask him how big a shoe it was that the guy who was tending that rear gate to that boat, how big a shoe did he have on when you kicked him one in the rear and says, get off, even though you knew the water was deeper than your head?
Yeah, that's the way it was, too. Whether it was deep or shallow, you got off. The Leningrad infantry thing, it was called. You jumped down off of the big boat on a rope ladder into that thing that is head high, and you go to shore, and that's what it's like, yeah. Soldiers lost their lives training for this landing procedure. But we were fortunate. It was only up to our field pack.
You guys were all weighted down with equipment,
and
Joe here
had their full field pack, guns, and ammunition, and everything.
And here it's D-Day, and you've got to get ashore. The water's over your head. You're being fired at. Joe, how many people lost their lives that day?
Oh, quite a few in that maneuver alone yes.
The thing there is, we were just a little shy of the actual landing, but the 88s were still coming in. But when we talk about the depth of the water, I see these guys, my height of 5'7", disappear. But there was a fellow beside me from Kentucky, about 6'4", and he see me go down, and he grabbed me around the neck and dragged me out like a dead cat to the shoreline. And of course, when I got my feet on sand, he looked at me and he says, I can't say it on the air, but he says, why in the hell don't you grow up before you join a rough outfit like this? And to me, I'll guarantee you it wasn't my idea to be there.
No, I guess it wasn't either of our ideas, but we did get there because at that time when we were drafted in, you didn't have a choice anymore. I thought I'd have a better choice, join the Air Corps or something, but no, you went all training for infantry and landing and so forth.
Well, you didn't have much choice there. It was like, it reminds me of the cattle yard down in Marion. They run you through, and this company needs 13 guys, and they drop a board in front of you. Those 13 go right, and the other 17 go left, and that's your pick.
Joe, you were injured overseas several times.
Three times.
Tell us what happened.
Oh, you don't want to hear that.
I do want to hear it. I just asked you.
Well,
tell us about the first time.
The first time was bad. You can be in basic training. You can be in training for years, and no one knows what war is like because this generation had never been in war. You're just what you read in the book. They told us to get to the outer edge of this strip of woods and dig in. And the next morning we're going to take that small town. I can't recall the name, but it was a big mistake. You dig in where there's a tree line, and all the krauts had to do is shoot into the trees. It would explode, and if you were down in a foxhole, you would get rained on, like hail coming down. So I was lucky enough to be next to the tree, and I took a shot in my back next to my spine. It's still under my left shoulder blade, and one in my right leg between the knee and the hip. And so a friend of mine next to me, he said, I got to get you out of here. We had to cross a field about the length of a football field. And of course, the Germans had clear sight of that. We got halfway across, and I took another bullet in my right arm just below the elbow. So here I am with a bad left arm, a bad right leg, and then I get my right arm disabled. It reminded me of first day of deer hunting when a deer runs across the field and seven guys shooting at it with the front leg dangling. That was me. But I made it across the hedgerow. And that was my first experience. Kind of tough one, but I made it.
And you're still carrying that shrapnel with you.
It's still in there, yeah. I haven't slept on my left side in 65 years because I know where it is. It bothers. But the nice thing about it is they did send me to England and give me a bed for 4 weeks. And about a Thursday noon, the doc come in with a straight poker face and says, you're doing well. Would you like to go down to the rehab for about 2 or 3 weeks and toughen up? And that sounded fine. I took his word for it, but you know where I landed? Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock, I was back in France in a foxhole and ready to hit Dinard the next morning. Weak as a, I don't know what you'd call it, but I had a struggle. You know, you lay in bed for 4 weeks, you lose your strength, and like the paper said, they send me back to the grinder one more time.
Irv, were you wounded or were you one of the lucky ones?
You know, I had a very similar experience to what their friend here told you about. I was in a special place there, too, where there were trees, and they were using an 88, they called it, from a tank, and they zeroed in on us and would hit those trees, and a tree burst hit me on my side one time, and I thought I lost the whole side the way it felt. I fell down and finally found that I was still pretty whole, so I got out of that area. And later in another battle, the same kind of area, we were in a tree area, and an 88 shell hit a fragment from that tree burst, hit me, and I was knocked out and wounded and bleeding pretty bad. And one of my buddies, after I fell down the hill and rolled into a hole for a while, crawled down further, and in the next line, one of my buddies, two of them, lifted me over the hedgerow and saved me there, and we bandaged up and kept going. After that, we went to the hospital, and I came back in the front line again right after that.
If it wasn't for those other soldiers, your friends in the front line, both of you wouldn't be around today.
Very similar to what he did. Yeah, that one side slab of tree that hit me, it injured my, I knocked a tooth out, and my hearing got pretty bad from that, and my side. But went back into battle until the end there. Went through France, Belgium, Luxembourg, Bastogne, so forth.
Irv, when you got back, was there a big brass band and a parade waiting for you?
I'll tell you. No, not from the Army, I mean, from the, when we were discharged, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, on the boat there was some bands, yes, at New York, but not at home, really.
What was the trip like to you?
The trip that we took?
The one you just took last week.
It was wonderful. I'll tell you, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody responsible and that did anything that helped, including the finances and the wonderful receptions we got. Jim Campbell and Mike Thompson did a wonderful job at this thing. We had a wonderful dinner, going away dinner. And then at the airport, we left with and went to Dulles Field. All well organized. We were fed well, and in the buses waiting for us there, always took us to the monuments in D.C. and through D.C. And we didn't really have to walk a lot because they could park so close to all of it.
Irv, can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 86 years old.
86.
Retired.
You're one of the young guys.
Just a youngster.
Yeah, I'm one of the juniors. We did have some, you know, 93. Our friend here, how old was he? 90?
91,
yes.
Tomorrow.
Your birthday's tomorrow.
Tomorrow
already. Boy, how about that?
I don't say 91. I'm like President Reagan was. I will be celebrating the 52nd anniversary of my 39th birthday.
There you go.
I don't like those big numbers.
No. One of the wonderful things that happened, I guess, is the organizing of the thing. We all had an honor guard with us. And my honor guard was picked by either Mike or Joe or Jim. Was my nephew, a Marine. And he was our honor guard. It's wonderful to have somebody along like that, you know, relative. So it was all in all just a beautiful trip. When we saw the unknown soldier's tomb, as we were leaving it, there were happened to be incidental group of school children.
We were talking about that during the first half hour. That was something else, wasn't it?
Okay, you knew that then.
But
did you want to hear that?
Well, I want to hear your impressions of it. You bet.
Yes, it's unbelievable. You walked through along the sidewalk. They were all lined up waiting for us to leave, and all shook their hands and thanked us and all that. It was a tear-jerking experience.
Irv Feit and Joe Carlin, two of the guys who kept America free during World War II. They were participants in the Never Forgotten Honor Flight. We've also got Jim Campbell, who's the founder of the organization that made it happen, Pete Wasson of the Wausau Daily Herald, who went along for the ride. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We want to hear from you. If there's a World War II vet that's important in your life, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to the phones. Bernie and Weston, you're on Route 51. Hello, Bernie.
Hi. How you doing today?
Doing well.
Say, I just wanted to, my call is not about myself. It's about the folks that set this thing up for these WW2 guys. I'm retired military, Air Force. And I just want to thank the Honor Flight folks for what they did for all those World War II vets. You guys are very special people, and we know that you worked very, very hard for this. And my wife and I were at the return of the flight along with, I might add, the Man of Honor Society, who, in fact, Jim Foost, our president, was on the flight. But I just want to say special thanks to all that who spent countless hours organizing this flight. And I know that Jim Campbell is a main part of this thing and also a Man of Honor. And I would like to say to Jim, Semper Fi, my brother, and job well done.
Semper Fi back to you, Bernie.
Oh, I didn't know you were there.
I got to tell you, I heard that over and over and over on this trip. And I think we were at Iwo Jima, at the Iwo Jima Memorial, when I heard probably the 25th person come up and thank Jim for putting this together. And Jim was choking back tears, and a couple minutes later, I asked, how often has that happened to you on this trip? And he said that he's cried more in the last 5 months than he's cried in the rest of his life. This was emotional for everybody involved. It was really something to watch, and it was a privilege to watch it.
Well, it was an honor for us to be there, too. I'm a Vietnam vet, and we of course, didn't get much welcome when we came back, but...
I think you had it worse than the World War II vets did, Bernie.
Yeah, I think so, too. Well, I think they're going to rectify that because we got a little deal going on at Lambeau Field coming up, and we'll be there. So maybe we'll get thanked, too.
We can thank you right now. Bernie, thanks so much for your service and for all the veterans who are listening. If you'd like to join the conversation, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. We'll be back after this short. Joe, you fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Is that correct?
That's right.
Any memories, any stories you'd like to share about that?
Like I said before, you maybe don't want to hear them, but it was... a very difficult time in the weather, even if you had nothing else to do, just to stay out there in the woods with freezing hands and feet, leather shoes. It was almost unbearable. I don't know how I did it. People ask me, how did you do it? I don't know. The weather conditions were so terrible, and everything was landmined. If you had to move ahead, every step you took, you just about was almost certain it's the last one you're going to take. So, but then I was wounded on Thanksgiving Day. I stayed on the line until a week before Christmas, so I went through the part of the Battle of the Bulge, and I would say that was my lucky day. Never felt better in my life than the day they threw me in the meat wagon and hauled me back down that hill, because the further he drove, the less I heard the artillery going off. So that was the best day of my life. And
the day you were shot at the Battle of the Bulge.
Yep, that was the best thing, because after the third time, after 4 months in the hospital, they didn't have the gall to send me back up front anymore. I was reclassified and joined a rear area general service engineer group, and I Couldn't believe how nice people could have it during a war. I lived the life of my Riley. I lived in Napoleon's castle for 4 months.
Napoleon's castle?
In Napoleon's castle.
Explain that to us.
Well, they were repairing roads and bridges, and of course, one morning the captain blew the whistle, and he says, the war is coming to an end, and you guys are all going to have your uniforms pressed clean, all the buttons and chevrons on, or you're not getting a pass. And of course, everybody start meowing because there's no way to get this done. So he says he'll think about it. The following morning, he blew the whistle again. He says, there's got to be an answer. There's somebody around here knows how to do that. And of course, I'm the guy who stood 7 feet tall, and I says, I'm the guy who can do it. Because I had to do it at home if I wanted to go out. We used to wear cotton slacks. They had to be laundered, and you could find 17 wrinkles per inch on a cotton pair of slacks, so I knew how to do it.
You know, I'm looking at things here, and we are running out of time. We're down to our last 4 minutes. I've got two veterans on the line. I've got two guys here who went with them, and I've got two telephone calls lined up. I'm going to try to get to both of these calls. Caroline in Rhinelander, very quickly.
I just wanted to say thank you. My father was a World War II veteran. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1991, not able to participate in this honor flight. But listening to you gentlemen talk about your experiences has absolutely brought tears to my eyes. It's very much like listening to my own father. Thank you for the memory.
Thank you, Carolyn. And let's go back to the phones. Ron and Rothschild, you're on Route 51. Hello, Ron.
Hi. I just wanted to say I feel like I was one of the fortunate to be a guardian for these veterans and spend a day with them. It was just an absolute honor, and it was a great day. It was just indescribable and totally unpredictable as how events happened that everybody's heard about now.
Jim says you're Ron Fite.
Yes.
You related to Irv, who's on the phone with us right now?
Yes, that's my uncle. Yes, I
okay.
was his guardian, one of two men that I had, yes, to have the privilege of being the guardian for.
I'm gonna ask both of the vets, and we're down to our last minute here. So if you could just as succinctly as you can, starting with you, Irv, what could America use today in the year 2010 that we had back in the 40s when we fought the Great War and when our veterans returned to rebuild America, Irv?
What are you asking? What
could America use today that we had back in the 40s when we fought and won the Great War? What spirit? What sense?
Oh, well, it couldn't be a better one than what we had when we got back here. I'll tell you, when we went to the airport, got to the airport in Mosinee about 10:30, we never expected a crowd to reach from end to end of the airport there to greet us. Bands and all, flag waving and all. It was just wonderful. But that attitude you have to have with our United States that we had at that time, I think we have to continue that. Yes.
Irv, I'm going to have to leave it at that. Jim Campbell, very quickly, if people want to get in touch with your organization, how do they do that?
Our website is neverforgottenhonorflight.org. And for veterans who want to call for more information, 715-573-8519.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Jim Campbell of the Never Forgotten Honor Flight, Pete Wasson, Assistant Managing Editor of the Wausau Daily Herald, and World War II veterans Joe Carlin and Irv Fite. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Mary Baldwin. Special music today by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. Next Thursday, it's a live Route 51 show on location at Lake Arrowhead in Nakusa. It's our annual listener appreciation dinner. You are invited. We've got a jam-packed program with George Mead of the Mead Witter Foundation, Sam Fairchild, whose company Energy Composites may help lead the Wisconsin Rapids area into the forefront of the green energy revolution. Also, two regional legislators, Republican State Senator Luther Olson of Ripon and Democratic Assemblyman Marlon Schneider of Wisconsin Rapids. Reminder, you can follow our adventures on Facebook and Twitter. That's it for us. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.